shoot, they score!
Score!
We have put the cloud
in! Put the shot, they score!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got
to
be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think it's more of a personnel issue or more of a
scheme? He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. All those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to a post-trade deadline edition of NHL This Week, a special Monday edition, wrapping up the day in trades, a not-so-busy NHL trade deadline, certainly compared to last year and the couple of years previous. It was a much quieter day in the trade front.
Boy, was I wrong.
Yes, you were. You predicted on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Ezra, that you thought it was going to be a busier trade deadline day than there was than it was last year, which I believe had been the busiest of all time. Is that correct?
That's correct. And In my defense, I told this to Richie, who was on with Rick today during the roundtable. I mean, if you count all the trades that took place on Saturday and Sunday, it was actually a fairly busy lead up to the trade deadline. But unfortunately, all of those trades happened on Saturday and Sunday. So today we had a dozen trades.
Yeah, I don't think that helps Richard and Rick very much there, as you guys had to fill a number of hours worth of content without very many trades coming your way there, Ray. Richie?
Hustler suggested that the TSN have a 72-hour trade center show.
Well, I mean, that's the problem that they're running into is, of course, that the the general managers aren't in the business of caring about the television. So they wait and they make the trade when it happens. And you saw Saturday, after we got off the air from Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Florida, I think, acquired the entire NHL for a little while there. And it got busier again on Sunday, and then today it ended up being a bit of a quieter day than we've seen in past years.
And that's just the thing. I mean, if you include all of the trades Florida made, all of the trades that Toronto made, obviously the Eric Staal trade to the Rangers, and you include the Christopher Stieg trade going from Carolina to L.A., there were a lot of trades, guys. Maybe there weren't as many blockbuster trades, and there were some names that were left out there today, namely guys like Dan Hamhuis and Louis Erickson. But as we know, in this rental market, it's tough, and a lot of teams aren't willing to give up those first-round picks to get guys like Dan Hamhuis and Louis Erickson. So overall, it was a little bit disappointing, but when you factor in some of the names that were moved around, and especially the Winnipeg Jets, we said it on Saturday, Drew, we weren't expecting the Jets to make many moves, if any.
And
go ahead. Quickly, I guess we'll talk about Erickson later, but we brought up the point about Andrew Ladd months ago, and that was the Jets, as an organization, probably benefited. They weren't going to be the first place team in the conference. They probably benefited from being out of it at this point in terms of Andrew Ladd decision. Because we said in December and January, or probably more so October and November, because we were kind of fading away then. October, November, the worst thing for the Jets is to be right on the playoff bubble, 2 points in or out, and have to deal with the Andrew Ladd situation. Because I heard J.P. Barrie interviewed Andrew Ladd's agent, and Kevin Cheveldayoff was keeping them abreast. If there was no trade possibilities, maybe there would be negotiations. It's kind of what he seemed to allude to. And so you think to yourself, well, if the Jets were in it and couldn't sign him, like Erickson today, and now they made some acquisitions, but they didn't trade him.
Sure.
And then you could be left losing him for nothing. And a guy like Erickson, to me, is too valuable to lose for nothing. And a guy like Ladd, the same thing.
The only reason, and I know we'll talk about Erickson later on, the only reason why, from Boston's perspective, losing a guy like Erickson for nothing, you can sort of justify, is that Boston's going to be a lot more active in the unrestricted free agent market than the Jets ever will be. So maybe they can compensate by, maybe they lose Erickson for nothing. And, obviously they didn't trade him today, so he's going to hit unrestricted free agency status.
Well, he likely will, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you can sign sign a player to replace him, whereas for the Jets, they weren't going to be in the market to sign a player to replace Andrew Ladd if he went to unrestricted free agency.
Unlikely. I see your point there, Drew. I still think it's a tough to lose an asset for nothing.
I agree.
But I do see your point that if they're going to be a team spending up to the top of the cap, they have an ability to make up for it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And guys, even though it might be a little bit unlikely, there is still a chance that Louis Erickson re-signs in Boston. There is a chance, even that if that's sure. a small chance. I mean, Boston now really has to sign him, or as Richie said, they are going to lose him for nothing. That was probably the biggest name. I know, Drew, you want to get into something here, but
yeah.
for me, the bigger story was that there were certain teams that we expected to be active that weren't active. To me, that was a bigger story than the lack of trades. I mean, you're talking Minnesota, you're talking Tampa Bay, you're talking maybe even Detroit. To me, I was
Los
surprised.
Angeles.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
no, I mean, to me, there's one team. It's Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Vancouver.
The other ones yeah. I can see not making. I mean, LA adds their winger. We'll go over every team. But has Vancouver not traded Hamus and Verbata?
It doesn't make any sense.
And it was a little bit contradictory to hear that Dan Hamhuis, I know they played the audio, maybe we can play that later on our show, but they played it on H&L, you know, just an hour ago. Dan Hamhuis was saying that he didn't want to move his family out east, but he was willing to accept a trade to Chicago yeah. or Washington, for example.
Dallas, too. Yeah.
So
it does, and we'll talk about the Vancouver, because that was the most head scratcher of lack of moves were the Canucks and the general manager there in not trading Verbata, not trading Hamhuis. Let's go back to the Winnipeg Jets. They were silent today. They lose Adam Partey on waivers to the Edmonton Oilers, which obviously was going to be a possibility when they put him on waivers, you know, 24 hours ago or whatever it was. You know, now that the trade deadline has come and gone, do you view the Andrew Ladd, the return for that the Jets got for Andrew Ladd, in a different light? Having seen what all the other players, what you know, the guy, other rentals went for today, do you think that now, you know, 48 hours, 72 hours now after the trade has occurred, that it's Kevin Sheveldayoff got a better return than he was initially given credit for? Do you think it's pretty much the same, or do you think maybe that he could have held off and gotten a little bit more today if he had traded him on Monday, like the Coyotes did, let's say, with Mikhail Bodker?
It doesn't change that much, but when you see some of the trades. For example, Brandon Peary going for a sixth rounder. I have no idea why that trade was made with getting that little in return, Rich. Like, I would have thought that he would have got a third or fourth rounder. Like, I'm not as high on Brandon Peary, pardon me, as some others. Like, he's got a 20-goal season, you know, was some of that because of who he was playing with in Florida? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But a sixth rounder, I mean, that's nothing, essentially. And you know, to answer your question, I said this on Saturday. I think the return for Andrew Ladd was pretty good, but there's no way to evaluate this right now. I mean, we just don't know how good Marco Dano was going to be, right? Richie, he's 21 years old. You know, is he going to be a second liner? Does he project as a second liner or a third liner? I mean, we just don't know. So you can't really say if this was a good trade for the Jets because you don't know what the first rounder is going to turn into. Are the Jets going to flip the first rounder to possibly sure. get a higher draft pick from their original first rounder? So I still think the Jets did well. I mean, I can't say that the Jets won the trade right now. So to answer your question, I think it's changed a little bit because we saw what certain teams had to give up. I mean, the Bruins had to give up a second or fourth rounder for Lee Stempniak. The Jets could have signed Lee Stempniak to 1 year. The Bruins could have had him on a PTO, right? Mm-hmm. So they gave up a lot for Lee Stempniak, but then you see some of the other moves. I mentioned Brandon Peary. I mean, they didn't get much for Brandon Peary. Maybe there's something there that we don't know about, but so I don't think much has changed. I still think that Chevy did pretty good with the Ladd trade, the return he got.
Yeah, it doesn't change my perspective at all, Drew. I thought that a first rounder and a prospect, not top end, was going to be the cost, and that's what it was. And, you know, to understand also that, I mean, Ladd was the top of the chain for forwards. You could argue whether him or Erickson is more valuable forward.
Sure.
Ladd has the cups and all that, and he's likely going to top out, and he was on the top of the TSN list. And the Bruins obviously contending. We didn't see what that would have market would have brought in for an Erickson. But, you know, it was what the market is at the time. That wasn't the issue. And to me, the issue was just where is it all going? But
well, let's talk about the where is it all going. I mean, I don't think...
Didn't we flesh that out on Saturday?
I know we fleshed it out on Saturday, but I mean, there was always the possibility that the Jets were going to maybe make a trade today. No. But
not
it
really.
Didn't even seem like it was... You know, you listen to what Kevin Sheveldayoff had to say. It doesn't sound like they were even anywhere remotely close to making another trade today.
I mean, you always want to be in the mix, but they're looking for fixes that are more than short-term. And all the trades today were guys that are short-term. No, was there any long-term trades?
No, there was nobody that was under a long-term. I mean, the only guy who's really, you know, who's still under control and who's not a pure rental is Brandon Peary, who's, you know, an RFA. Pretty much everybody else that was dealt.
Remember, he's also hurt.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, right, what do you care if you...
fair enough, Drew. I understand that. But, I mean, let's not overstate his value.
I agree. I thought that the people that were saying that Brandon Peary is worth a second-round pick, I thought might have been drinking a little bit of the
Kool-Aid.
Who are
those people?
There were people, you know, some. I thought I saw some analysts that suspected that that's what the Panthers were looking to receive in return for him. Now,
yeah, I mean, Drew, I could look for 4 first-round picks for Brandon Peary, but it doesn't mean it's what he's worth.
I know it's not what he's worth. That's why I thought it was bizarre from the start that would be what they'd be in the market for.
Back to what you were saying before, though, Drew, about, you know, where the Jets are heading and their lack of moves today.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, the Jets were clearly sellers, right? But who were they selling? I mean, the only pending UFAs were Party and Matt Halaschuk. And Chevy said that he tried to move Party, and that's why he put it on waivers. And part of that is, I think, that they want to give a guy like Josh Morrissey a little bit of playing time towards the end of the season because they're not going to make the playoffs here, right, guys? Mm-hmm. But the Jets just didn't have that many guys that I think they wanted to move. I mean, this is one of the youngest teams in the NHL right now. We talked about it on Saturday. I didn't think there was any chance they were moving, for example, a Matthew Perreault or a Drew Stafford. They're certainly not moving Brian Little. He's out for the season.
Sure.
And they're certainly not going to move any of their players that are in the last years of their entry-level deals. So Scheifele, Trouba, Lowry, no. I mean, guys like Ehlers. I mean, none of these guys were being moved. So I'm not at all surprised the Jets didn't do much. Andrew Ladd was trading him. Was a huge move for this organization. They've only made 2 real big trades in 5 years, the Ladd trade and then the Kane and Bogo trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have any reason to believe that they were going to make a move. I thought, you know, okay, maybe if they get a third rounder or a fourth rounder for Michael Hutchinson, they do it. But aside from that, I'm not at all surprised the Jets stood pat.
Only team looking for a goalie, I think, was San Jose, right? And Reimer went there with better numbers than Hutchinson, and they got basically a fourth rounder for him.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. So what Hutchinson wasn't going to return anything. I mean, that's the problem is that it really was a buyer's market today, I think, at the end of the day, for the most part, that the you know, a lot of teams who had guys who were pending UFAs, there wasn't a ton of interest in them. The team said, you know, we're good with what we have on our rosters as is. We don't really need to pay you to acquire somebody that's not much better.
Andrew, further to that point, I realize that people like to see a lot of trades. Like, I realize that, you know, NHL trade deadline is hyped up a lot, and mm-hmm. people were disappointed with the lack of trades. But in regards to the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, most of the trades were rentals. So the Jets weren't in on most of the players. So I don't know what trade a lot of fans were looking for. So I wouldn't be disappointed at all with the lack of movement for the Winnipeg Jets here, because this is a team that's going to be rebuilding in the offseason through the draft and also trying to acquire possibly another top 6 forward in free agency. But I don't think anything was really there for the Jets.
The only thing you could say is, Ian, and I think Drew brought it up on Saturday, and we talked about it before, is you're not making this year clearly. Perreault and Stafford are on 1-year deals. There is clearly a lack of scoring out there on the market.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you say, oh, Erickson's not there. Hey, we'll put Stafford out there and say, maybe we'll get a few bites because he can score 20 goals. And some team says, hey, we give up a second and a fourth for Lee Stepniak. We'll give you a second and a third or a second and something like that. And you capitalize on the fact that, hey, this market is lacking scoring. We have guys on extra-term deals. Now, you could say Stafford is better than Stempniak, and he has another year in his contract. I want 2 sec. You know, who knows? I'm not saying you would have got it. But that's something that you could say could be out there. But aside from that, I can't see really where else you'd be going with it.
Yeah, that was sort of my point, is, you know, were the Perreaults and the Staffords being discussed today? And I don't know. We probably won't ever know. But that's food for thought, I think, from a Winnipeg Jets fans' perspective. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to go trade by trade through the moves that were made by Central Division teams. We're also going to be joined on the program today by both Marty Biron from TSN. You saw him on the Trade Center desk the entire day. He's going to join us to break down everything that happened today. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. On the road.
Tell This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Trade deadline recap. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information about the Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, time to go division by division, team by team, breaking down each and every trade that was completed both today and over the course of the weekend and really in the entire trade deadline season. We start with the Central Division, and we'll start with the Dallas Stars. Dallas Stars arguably acquired, you know, one of the bigger names that was out there on the trade deadline block earlier today when they acquired from Calgary defenseman Chris Russell. In exchange, they gave up Jyrki Jokapäkä, also a defenseman, prospect Brett Pollock, and a second-round draft pick, which is conditional, could become a first-round pick if the Stars win the Western Conference.
And if he plays half the games.
And if he plays half the games. That's right. So Chris Russell to the Dallas Stars. It certainly makes sense because we know the Stars need defense. What about the – did they give up too much for Chris Russell on a rental basis?
Well, I mean, I don't know, Drew. That's a fair question. I mean, I guess it's a fair question for every person, player we talk about. You're the Dallas Stars. I'm sure they probably wanted to add Dan Hamhuis too, but you needed to help your defense out, in my opinion. You needed to help the defense out, and – you're in one of those situations where Jim Nill's probably a little bit ahead of where he thought he would be with this group, and he had to show the group that he believed in them and was going to help out a little bit. So I don't know a lot about your Jokapäkä, so I can't speak to him. I don't know a lot about Brett Pollock. It doesn't seem like either of them are their top end guys.
Shouldn't you know a lot about him? He's your cousin.
I know. That's what Remus was saying today. but you know what? The truth is, the second round pick, if you get to the conference finals, meaning if you beat Chicago,
yeah,
and one of the, you know, Nashville, Colorado, probably, or St. Louis, and then Chicago, you're really Chris Russell. To me, they're not beating those teams without Chris Russell, so that's why that can one of the conditions is in there. And if you are Dallas and you beat him, then you're happy to give up a first round pick because he has helped you get to that point. So I like that condition. I have no issue with it. Chris Russell's underlying numbers aren't favorable, and people have been pretty critical of him. I think in this, and I was saying earlier today, I think in this system, I first of all don't think he's as bad as his numbers state. I think in this system, it'll benefit him greatly, and I don't have an issue with what they gave on this.
Yeah, and you're talking about the advanced stats, Richie, not necessarily the goal and assist totals, because Chris Russell, he's not Mark Giordano. He's not, you know, he's not going to be one of your top offensive defensemen. But the Dallas Stars don't need that, Rich.
Sure,
they've got John Klingberg. They've got Alex Goligoski. Jason Demers can chip in offensively. Chris Russell is that defensive defenseman that they've been looking for. I think he's very underrated. And I realize that I seem to always be going toe-to-toe with all the advanced stats people. But he's not a possession guy. I mean, Chris Russell blocks shots. He hits. He'll drop the gloves if he needs to, but he's a stay-at-home defenseman. He's a good defensive defenseman. I realize that, you know, the Corsi and the Fenwick numbers might not be that good. I'm not going to argue with the numbers, but I think, as Richie said, the Dallas Stars right now are not a team that's just happy to get into the playoffs. I mean, when you have Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, Jason Spezza, and all these, and I could go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a top team. This is a team that's looking to knock off the Chicago Blackhawks in the Central Division. I mean, this team wants to get a cup here. Jim Nill is not afraid to make moves. He's already acquired Johnny Oduya in the offseason. I mean, he did that with the uh-huh. – with. I mean, this is a good defense now. You look at that. I almost went through the entire defense. You can throw in, you know, Jordy Benn in there. I think he might be injured right now, or he was injured earlier in the season. But I think also Calgary did pretty good here too, Richie. Pollock, by the way, is playing for the Edmonton Oil Kings.
Yeah.
And he's been putting up really good numbers for the Edmonton Oil Kings. So he's a couple years away probably. But to get, you know, the draft pick. And another thing to mention here, Drew, is the Calgary Flames right now are all Dallas Stars fans now.
Sure.
So they're hoping Dallas goes to the Stanley Cup Finals, or at least the Western Conference Finals, so they get a better pick.
Just like the Jets are cheering for the Chicago Blackhawks, because then they would get that conditional third-round pick if the Hawks were to win the Cup.
You know, you look at the back end of Dallas, Drew, and you see John Klingberg. He's been the story, of course.
Sure.
And Oduya, Demers, you know, a good puck-moving duo. Goligoski and Klingberg, a good puck-moving duo. Jordy Benn, you know, he's a solid stay-at-home guy. I like his game. He's limited to a bottom-pairing guy. Then you have Jamie Oleksiak, a bigger guy, a younger player. Chris Russell is an upgrade on your left side. As he mentions, he's an upgrade defensively. Goligoski is a smooth skater, a good puck mover, not defensively, to me, very effective. Russell, maybe you'll see Russell slide in with Klingberg and move Goligoski with Benn, something like that. You might see. I'm not sure they want to do the sides because Benn and Goligoski are both lefties. But there are things to, you know, there are options there now. And you need depth on the back end going to the playoffs. And Lindy Ruff's going to want to see somebody back there he can trust. So you don't give up nothing by any means, but if you want to get player value, you're going to have to give up something.
And Jordy Benn isn't injured right now, so.
No, he's not.
He's missed some games earlier this year, but he's good to go now.
Continuing with the Central Division, we talked about the Blackhawks and their big moves earlier in the week. Really, the only acquisition they made of any, not, and it's not even significant, depth. Tim Jackman came over from Anaheim. I don't expect Tim Jackman's going to get much ice time there with Chicago.
I would agree with that, Drew. I think overall they've made great additions to their squad. Mm-hmm. You know, they give up something to get something again, but Andrew Ladd gets his assist yesterday on the power play, playing in front of the net for the Blackhawks against the Washington Capitals. Dale Weiss and Thomas Fleischman are not yet in the lineup. No, Fleischman was in the lineup, but Weiss wasn't.
Yeah, Fleischman was in the lineup against Washington.
And Weiss was having some visa issues. But Fleischman, you know, gives him some skill, some depth. Weiss will give him some that sandpaper on the right side. When Hossa comes back, Shaw will drop down. They've got Teravainen. And there's just so much depth. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't add a defenseman.
Well, do you get the impression that they were trying everything, you know, to get rid of Brian Bickell off their books?
Well, they've been trying, I know, for a long time.
I know, but they were. I would imagine that they probably would have wanted to. They would have offered a draft pick to any team that would be willing to use their salary cap space.
Probably right about
I think
that.
They were willing to eat salary as well.
Well, anything to open up money to be able to add a defenseman. I think like the thing is this talk seems tremendous. I mean, let's be honest, this team is great, but they're basically going three deep here. I mean, they played four guys last year. With Oduya, and now they're going to go three. I don't see, like, is Gustafsson going to be, or Van Riemsdyk, Roosevelt, I don't think those are going to be the guys. Is Gustafsson going to be the guy? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know a ton about him to say absolutely not. I know enough about Van Riemsdyk and Roosevelt to say very likely not. So, again, you have such a good forward group, and you like your goaltender, and you have such good defensemen that you could kind of roll through and always have one of those defensemen on the ice at all times. It's going to take creative coaching, which they have. But that was a little surprising to me. It makes them a tad more vulnerable, even though they're very, very, very good.
I think to me, Rich, I mean, Gustafsson, I've seen him very limited when he played against the Jets and, you know, a handful of other games, just spot kind of sightings. But for me, it would be Van Riemsdyk, who is the best skater of those three. And Michael Roosevelt, I mean, he's a veteran. He's been around, you know, back to the Ranger days. But to me, out of those three guys, I think Van Riemsdyk has the highest upside and the best skating ability. But still, Van Riemsdyk doesn't have a lot of playoff experience, right?
Not very good defensively.
Well, and when you're talking about going up against teams like Dallas and Anaheim and, you know, the LAs, the big boys, once you get into the second and third round.
Well, Dallas is less of a concern for me for Van Riemsdyk than LA and Anaheim. Yeah.
And that's, I think, why they acquired, you know, for example, a Dale Weiss, and not to mention a guy like Andrew Ladd. These are big players that can play the physical style of game. They're good offensively. So I agree with Richie. As far as the forward group goes, it's easily the best in the NHL. And I think Dallas is right up there as well. The team in the Central Division, to me, Drew, that was the most surprising for their lack of inactivity is the Blues.
Well, and that's who we're going to go to next, the St. Louis Blues. They really did nothing. They were silent today. They didn't make any trades at all today. They had acquired a backup goaltender earlier over the weekend. But the St. Louis Blues, a team that is, I mean, it's sort of a rock and a hard place for Doug Armstrong, Blues general manager.
Is it a rock and a hard place? I mean, I just think this is the same old, right? Now, granted, they've had a lot of injuries.
That's what I was saying about rock and the hard place, is that he doesn't know what his roster is. He's never seen them play together this year.
But he's seen them play together, aside for Parayko and Brouwer, I guess. He's seen them play together every year for the past few years.
Sure. So, I mean, if you're
I guess Jake Allen's better and all that, but, I mean, the core, Drew, is the core not the same?
The core is the same. So how, if you were Doug Armstrong,
with the exception of maybe Brouwer, but
if you were Doug Armstrong, what would you have looked to do? As the St. Louis Blues general manager.
In fairness to Doug Armstrong, he kind of left himself. He told you what the team was in the offseason, and it was tough to make moves now.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, I still have told you guys, I don't feel confident enough in the goaltending.
Right.
Now you have Elliott's injury. I would have added a goaltender.
Well, they did. They added Anders Nilsson.
I would have added a
yeah, but he's a backup.
A bigger name goaltender.
So they would have I mean, they've tried that route before, going and they got a Ryan Miller 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, or 2 years ago out of Buffalo.
Yep.
So, I mean, they've gone that route. Did you really expect today that they were... First of all, who is this goaltender?
Yeah, that's a fair question, Drew. I'm not saying, you know... I went off the top of my head.
Cam Ward is the only UFA goaltender that's coming up.
Yeah, I agree with Rich. I don't think the goaltending is as good as most of the teams in their own division, let alone the Western Conference. I think they really wanted Louis Erickson. And, yeah, James Reimer would have helped for sure.
Yeah.
Louis Erickson, obviously, they were asking too much. St. Louis didn't want to give up what they were asking for. Like, were they asking for a Robbie Fabry, a first-rounder? Like, I don't know what they were asking for. But, you know, look at St. Louis compared to teams like Chicago and Dallas. They don't score as many goals as those teams. And I think, you know, to Richie's point, the core of this team has been the same. Ken Hitchcock's in his last year of his contract. I don't think Doug Armstrong did a lot to help out Ken Hitchcock. I mean, this is a Western Conference arms race. All these teams, Chicago, look what Anaheim did. Look what L.A. did. Even getting a guy like Chris Versteeg. He's got 2 Stanley Cups.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, 30, 35 points? Maybe he has more than that this year. I mean, he's a guy you plug out there on your third line or second line or whatever. I mean, I think Dean Lombardi did a nice job making acquisitions there. And... St. Louis did absolutely nothing.
They did absolutely nothing. It'll be one more team before we have to go to break. The Nashville Predators, they pretty much stood pat as well.
I mean, you make a blockbuster deal. I mean, we talked about it. What could they add? It's not a ton. We thought, like, you make a blockbuster deal in the middle of the year, you transform your team.
The Johansson-Jones trade. Yeah. So you're fine with them? Because they're not really a contender this year.
They could beat anybody. But they could also lose and likely lose in the first round. But they could beat anybody.
They've won 4 games in a row.
Okay. Colorado.
I wouldn't want to play Nashville in the first round. I'd rather play Colorado than Nashville.
Nashville's a tough team to play against. Again, we talked about it on Saturday. They were very close to upsetting Chicago last year.
The Colorado Avalanche. They were one of the most active teams. Do you want to do the Avs now or do you want to go to break and come back and do the Avs?
We can do the Avs now.
Okay.
I was surprised. I was surprised they went out there and got Michael Boddicker.
Yeah, Mikhail Boddicker they acquire from Arizona. They acquire Eric Zelena from the New Jersey Devils. Those are the two big names that they acquired.
Apparently they had a little bit of interest in Drouin as well.
That doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Boddicker, I guess he played with McKinnon, right? So in the queue.
Yep.
Drouin did.
If you look at Boddicker, I mean, is he gonna slide in beside McKinnon and Landeskog? Is he going to slide in beside Duchesne? Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's never a bad thing to have a guy like him on the roster. Mm-hmm. They traded a former first and a third round pick from 14. I don't know anything about either player.
Yeah.
Connor Bleakley and I forgot the other fellow's name. But
Wood. Kyle Wood.
Kyle Wood. And then Tanguay. I feel bad for Alex Tanguay there. So is it an upgrade? Yeah, of course. I mean, skating for sure.
How big of an upgrade, though?
I mean,
right?
I like Alex Tanguay still. He can't get around the ice very well, but... Boddicker can skate, and his pace will help this team for sure. I mean, he does. McKinnon, Duchesne, those guys can skate, and he can skate with those guys, and that's not easy. It's hard to keep up. Like, Jerome McGinley plays shotgun right now with Duchesne, and he cannot keep up, right? He's way behind the play with respect to a future Hall of Famer. Boddicker will help. I just surprised that a fringe playoff team that might not even make the playoffs sells young assets. Again, they may not like those young assets for Boddicker unless they're going to re-sign him. Jelena, quickly before Ezzy comes in here, Jelena, they give up a third rounder for. He can shoot the puck. He doesn't play probably as physical as you want a big guy to play, but he can be physical and can move. He just, his reads, like it's a tough situation to put him in the Western Conference with a lot of pressure on him offensively, meaning offensively against him defensively, because his sense isn't always great, and sometimes he makes bad reads, and he gets in bad situations, and I don't know how well he'll succeed in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and you expect him to be more of a third-pairing guy, maybe even a guy in the playoffs that is your seventh defenseman, Rich, and he just fell out of favor in New Jersey. You're right. I mean, he's a big body, 6'4", 200, well over 200 pounds.
Big shot.
But he's a guy that, you know, had his chance over 4 years with New Jersey. I think he's only still 24 years old. He's got 1 year left on his contract, but he just wasn't good enough defensively. Yeah. And then
he's going to be an RFA. So he's going to be an RFA. Under team control
he
for just, a while.
He fell out of favor, Drew. Yeah, I mean, guys like Damon Severson, Adam Larson, even a guy like Seth Helgeson, you know, he had big body. I mean, those guys are
that which the last name would seem to be the guy. If you see Helgeson play, he plays a little meaner. And again, my short viewings of Helgeson, plays a little meaner than Jelena, and but, a little probably more than what they wanted.
The reason I tweeted it out that I was a little bit surprised that they traded Jelena was just because the Devils don't have very many top defensive prospects. Like a guy like Steve Stantini is one of their top prospects from a couple of years ago. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Devils are thinking, well, we use that space and try to get a defenseman in the free agent market. They did trade for David Warsawski, who's more of a depth defenseman. So maybe they re-sign him next year. I'm not sure. But the Devils, I mean, that's their weak spot right now is defense because they're sure set in goal.
Last one in the Central Division quickly right up against the break. Right at the wire, like 90 minutes after the wire, the Minnesota Wild get David Jones out of Calgary in exchange for goaltender Nicklas Backstrom, who hasn't played at all this year. And I'm pretty sure his career is over. So
Jay Grossman, his agent, saying that he wants to still get at it. That's what I just read here.
Okay, well, so he's off to Calgary in exchange for a 2016 sixth-round pick.
It'd be a nice story, Richie, if Nicklas Backstrom, because I believe he hasn't played...
He hasn't played a minute
In 2 years, though.
I mean, it could be.
He didn't play much last year. Remember, like, Darcy Kemper, you know, took over, and Josh Harding had the injury problems, unfortunately, too.
It's I don't know. It's weird. Like, he's... Basically, it's a sixth-round pick for
David Jones.
But why you have to eat the back... I guess the Jones makes $4 million.
So it's an odd transaction. I mean, everything about the transaction was weird because it happened so late. It's like happened after everybody stopped paying attention.
David Jones, one of those guys where you see him play at times, you're like, oh, he's got the physical, he's got the build, and he's going to be a play. He just doesn't. He doesn't.
Very
put
streaky
much
player.
Yeah, doesn't put much together.
Backstrom's a UFA at season's end.
So is Jones.
Yeah. So it's all just a salary to make some numbers make sense at that point in time.
Yeah, I think Nicklas Backstrom is done, and David Jones will be the kind of guy who will, you know, he's probably a PTO guy next year. He has flashes of good play, but as he mentioned, they're not very common. And he's a big guy and a right-handed shooting guy, but you know, I haven't seen him play in detail a lot lately, so I can't speak to whether his skill set's fallen off or not.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Pacific Division. You're listening to NHL This Week Trade Deadline Recap Show on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Before we go any further,
please,
I got to give a shout-out to your wife, Laura, because you brought in this grapefruit and yogurt loaf.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the best things I've ever had in my life.
I'm glad you're enjoying the loaf.
They could sell this at Starbucks.
It's a good loaf. It's a very good loaf.
It's incredible. And we have an entire tray of Tim Horton sandwiches in here. We're eating good tonight,
we
boys.
We are eating pretty well tonight. You're right about that. Well, let's head over to the Pacific Division, recap some of the moves made by those teams.
Richie won't try the loaf.
Well, Richie's a little bit...
I just tried the loaf. It's good.
Okay, that's good. Thank you, Laura. You don't want to get on Laura's bad side there, Richard. That'd be very unfortunate. The Los Angeles Kings. Let's start with the Kings. They acquired Christopher Stieg, not today, but over this weekend, in exchange for a fifth-round pick, which and Valentin Zhikov. I'm not going to ask you about the prospect because obviously I don't think you know a ton about Valentin Zhikov.
It's a second rounder.
So Christopher Stieg, how does he fit into the Los Angeles Kings? You know, in terms of the arms race in the Western Conference, is Versteeg a good addition to the Kings in their efforts to keep up with the Blackhawks?
Well, he knows the Blackhawks pretty well, so he's going to have all the insight they want into how the Blackhawks do things.
He's a mole.
I do think, well, you know, he adds skill, Drew. He's a good puck handler. You know, he's a pretty smart player. He's not big, and he's not a good skater for his size. But to be honest, LA is not a bad team for that. The pace in LA is not the same as it is in Chicago. And the pace he'll have to keep up to in LA will be more will be commensurate, really, with his capabilities. So, you know, I see him probably adding in something on the second power play, and you put him beside a couple of guys who can make plays, and I have no issue with the move.
Yeah, and the top six is pretty set. You've got that 70 line, and then you've got Dustin Brown up there with Andrzej Kopitar, Richie, and Milan Lucic. And then right now, the thing that you have to note here is that Marian Gaborik is out for another month, right? Mm-hmm. So Marian Gaborik might miss the entire first round. He might miss a few games. Maybe he comes back a little bit earlier, Richie, but probably that is why the Kings went out and they acquired Chris Versteeg, to get a little bit offense that they were lacking from Gaborik. Mm-hmm. Gabrick's had a pretty average year. So it's not like, you know, Marian Gaborik was leading the NHL in scoring or anything like that. But when you get into the playoffs and you know, goals can be a little bit more elusive, right? And as Richie mentioned, Chris Versteeg, the two cups with Chicago, he's got the experience and he can maybe share some secrets. But more importantly, they're getting a guy that will provide some offense in the bottom four there, because, you know, I like guys like Jordan Staal, Jordan Nolan, yeah, and Dwight King and guys like this. But, I mean, they need some offense in the bottom six. Vinny LeCavalier, you can't count on him for too much. I mean, Vinny LeCavalier, you're expecting him to chip in a point every three or four games. So I really like what Dean Lombardi did there.
Moving up to Anaheim, where the Ducks were active today. They acquire Brandon Peary from the Florida Panthers. We talked about that earlier. They acquired Jamie McGinn from the Buffalo Sabres. That's for a third-round pick that could become a second if the Ducks make it to the Western Conference Final. They ship out Patrick Maroon to the Edmonton Oilers in a trade that happened later on this afternoon. And then they acquire Corey Tropp as well, who's just a depth player. So let's talk about the McGinn and the Peary acquisitions and the shipping out of Patrick Maroon from the Anaheim Ducks perspective.
Well, Maroon is kind of your slower skater, big body on the boards. You know, can be a load to handle there. Edmonton gets bigger there, and Edmonton's not very big up front, so they're trying to change a little bit of their style. And I think he's on at the books for another 2 years, so that's not a small commitment. In terms of Anaheim, I like McGinn. I like his game. I think he's involved in the play. He doesn't skate particularly well, but he gets after it. He doesn't have the hands to score 30, but he can put in 10 to 15, and he's active. So I think that, and he's willing to be physical and get involved in the play. I think that's the kind of player that Anaheim is suited to Anaheim just right. The pace won't be too much for him. He'll be able to engage in the physical play. He'll fit in. I think he'll fit into their style really well. Peary, you know, once he gets healthy, Peary's a shooter. You're going to need to put him with the playmaker to make him effective. Doesn't mean he's going to ride the shotgun with Ryan Getzlaff. I don't know about that, but, I mean, you put worse, you know, you put Ryan Getzlaff with most players, he'll make you pretty good. So, I have, again, they didn't give up very much here to make these moves, so I can't say I got too much of an issue with it.
Yeah, Rich, and if you look at what the Anaheim Ducks have done leading up to the trade deadline, you know, going back 2 or 3 months ago, Bob Murray's been probably the most active GM in the NHL. He's acquired David Perron, you know, trading Carl Hagelin, who he acquired just last summer. And I like how he's making moves. And the Ducks have some injury problems right now. We should mention that. That's kind of one of the main reasons why they made so many moves before the trade deadline. So I agree with Richie. I mean, Jamie McGinn, you're adding him for, you know, depth, most likely on your third line, fourth line. But Corey Perry had a hat trick last night. Ryan Getzlaff somehow managed to get back to close to a point per game now after those guys just had horrible starts to the season. But you look at the depth around, you know, the big guys, the Getzlaffs, the Perrys, the Kesslers, you know, guys like Silverberg have got to step it up down the stretch and be better. They were good last year in the playoffs, but they haven't been as good in the regular season here. But there's a lot of forward depth there. And the big move we were expecting, Richie, was maybe a guy like Sammy Vatanen being moved to get a forward, but they obviously got some forward depth without giving up one of those
but
guys.
But we said on Saturday, and I at least believe that if they really wanted to make a move, it was for a defenseman, and they didn't make that move. I wasn't suspecting that would be 100% what they were going to do. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. But what I would do is add a defenseman to that group.
On Saturday, we talked about the San Jose Sharks potentially being in the market for a backup goaltender. They did get that backup goaltender, getting James Reimer from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Reimer and Jeremy Morin go to San Jose. Going to Toronto is Alex Stalock, Ben Smith, and a conditional fourth-round pick. Your thoughts on Reimer fitting in with the San Jose Sharks?
Well, it's great for James Reimer. I mean, he goes from a non-playoff team, I should say, to a team that is going to go to the playoffs. And, you know, I think James Reimer, you know, we know he's a good Manitoba boy. Everybody knows that. But I think the thing that's always impressed me about James Reimer is, amidst all the controversy and all the he's not a backup goalie and the Leafs should trade him, he's not good and all that, he was always a class act to the media. He'd always go to the post-game scrums, and he would answer the questions, always seemed to have a smile on his face. Just a good character guy. So I think he'll fit in just because he's got a lot of NHL experience. And Alex Stalock, you could see that he was falling out of favor. I mean, Martin Jones is the guy there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think James Reimer's going there and they're expecting him to be the number one goalie. I think if Martin Jones struggles, Rich, in the playoffs, then you have the option of putting a guy like James Reimer in.
Absolutely.
James Reimer was a number one goalie for years, even with Jonathan Bernier there. I mean, Bernier struggled. Reimer could go in. So I think it's a great pickup for San Jose.
What's the downside here? You give up a fourth-round pick, basically, and you're getting a veteran netminder who can slide in, as Eddie said, and play if you need it. And Jones is still unpredictable. I mean, what do you have for Martin Jones?
Yeah.
It's his first season here, and I like his game. But I think this is a real good move by Doug Wilson, especially after his significant overpay for Polak and Spalling.
When we come back, we'll continue our look at the Pacific Division. You're listening to NHL This Week, trade deadline recap show on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the O'Legal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, Marty Biron of TSN joins us at 7 o'clock. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. We continue our look at the Pacific Division. We talked about the three playoff teams. Arizona Coyotes, they traded away Mikhail Bodker to the Colorado Avalanche. That was their big move of the day. You know, in terms of the return, you think the Coyotes got a decent return for Mikhail Bodker? I mean, I'm not asking you to break down Connor Bleakley and Kyle Wood, but at least knowing their pedigrees, knowing where they were drafted and things of that nature, can Coyotes fans be, you know, reasonably pleased with the return that they got?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, I don't know enough about the players, Drew. It's a tough one. If you're looking at it, you know, like Marco Dano's a first rounder in 13, Bleakley's a first rounder in 14.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you know a little bit less about him, maybe more upside. I don't know. Tanguy obviously taking some money back, and then you're getting a third rounder. I don't really know enough about Kyle Wood. So it's tough for me to say.
Yeah, well, I read that it's possible that Arizona doesn't sign Connor Bleakley, and then he goes back into the draft, Richie, and then I think you get a second rounder.
Yes, I believe
if that happens.
So like a compensatory pick.
I think that's an option here with Connor Bleakley, so it's possible Connor Bleakley becomes a second rounder in the draft, but I mean, Red Deer Rebels, I know that he's highly regarded. I haven't seen him play.
When they try him for a second then? Like,
yeah, why even get the prospect then?
Just I read that that's a possibility. I don't know if that'll happen, and Kyle Wood don't know a lot about, but I mean, Mikhail Bodker, you're talking about a guy, Richie, who was on the trade bait list, obviously, for a long time, and there were other teams that were interested in him.
Well, apparently he turned down big money.
It's possible, and, you know, for a guy like Bodker, as you mentioned, I mean, they're a little bit weak on the right side, Colorado. Jerome McGinley, you've got Blake Como. I mean, those are good players, but I'm just saying that you know, you throw in Mikhail Bodker in that mix, it's possible that he gets even first-line minutes, second-line minutes. And Blake Como and Jerome McGinley have kind of flip-flopped down the lines there with Matt Duchene and Nathan MacKinnon. So I like the acquisition, and you know, we talked about Eric Jelena earlier. I mean, they're going for it, and Colorado by no means has locked up a playoff spot. I mean, they're still going to be fighting right down to the wire, right? So these guys are just adding depth. And, you know, a guy like Alex Tanguay wasn't really factoring in. This might be his last year in the NHL. And by the way, great career for Alex Tanguay. I mean, he's got the Stanley Cup, but he just, as Richie mentioned, slowed down a little bit. So I like the moves. I wouldn't say that the Colorado Avalanche were the big winners, Drew. I know at the end of the show you want to
get into
the
winners and losers later on.
But I wouldn't say that they were a loser either. I think I like the moves they made and the reasons why they made the move, I think, because they want to stay on pace with the other teams in their division.
I suspect that both of you will mention in that winners and losers segment at the end of the program that the Vancouver Canucks were losers. They had two pending unrestricted free agents in Radim Verbata and Dan Hamhuis. They just did nothing today at all. You know, if you're a Canucks fan, you know, this is a very head-scratching day, and you're wondering what's going on with your front office, I think, after today's lack of moves.
Well, Drew, if you're a Canucks fan, you better get used to the term rebuild, because I don't know where this team is going. I mean, Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin are signed for one more year after this year, Richie. But what's the plan after, you know, the Sedins who have been, I mean, those guys are Hall of Famers. But, I mean, you're talking about a team that has tons of talent up front. I mean, you're talking the Jake Virtanens, you're talking Jared McCann, Bo Horvat and all that. But these guys are a couple years away at least from being really dominant NHLers, right? Mm-hmm. But after that, I mean, there's not a lot to be excited about. And you could possibly lose Verbata, Richie, and Hamhuis for nothing.
According to Farhan Lalji, you know, like covers the Canucks.
Hamhuis wants to stay in the area.
Right. According to Farhan Lalji, two things. Well, first of all, one, the Canucks came into the day, today is trade deadline day, with six pending unrestricted free agents and didn't get anything back for any of them. Go ahead, Rich.
I just don't understand. I mean, Hamhuis, if you re-sign him, okay, but then again, what are you trying to do there?
Mm-hmm.
Verbata, I don't get. I know there was an 18, what, no trade, so you were a little bit restricted there. Very odd. I really don't get it. I mean, you know, Drew, was there much for Yannick Weber or Matt Barkowski? It might have been something for Barkowski, but that's it. I nobody's taking Brandon Prust's contract, so really we're talking about Hamhuis and Verbata and Barkowski to a lesser extent.
And Hamhuis is a great defenseman. I mean, he was on the Olympic team, won the gold medal. But this isn't the 27-year-old Dan Hamhuis. He's 33 years old now. And, I mean, his next contract will probably be, I imagine, a 3 or 4 year deal. But just saying, I mean, like, the overall talent on this team is lacking. I mean, the goaltending is good. I mean, they've got Ryan Miller's a good goaltender. And they've got some good young forwards there. But I agree with Rich. Like, how do you not move anybody and get something in return? I guess the good news for Canucks fans is the young talent and the fact they're going to have some cap room. So they could go out and they could get a big-name free agent. But who's that guy going to be? And do they want to go to Vancouver?
You know, it's a good question. There was talk, of course, Dan Hamhuis had cleared only Chicago and Dallas as the two teams that he was willing to accept a trade to. This is Farhan Lalji again. After the Chris Russell trade, so after the Dallas Stars had acquired Chris Russell, the Stars went back to the Canucks and offered the Canucks a higher pick than what they had just given Calgary and a prospect. So they made this offer after they acquired Chris Russell. Apparently, according to Farhan Lalji on Twitter and according to his sources, the Vancouver Canucks did not return the Dallas Stars phone call. I mean, that's incredible.
Can't imagine what it's like doing on radio in Vancouver right now.
I think that they're, you know, I suspect it's probably a little bit fired up on the call-in shows in Vancouver, and I think for good reason.
They needed to get draft picks. That's what they needed.
Well, you have pending unrestricted free agents.
Right, so you had to get some draft picks. If teams weren't giving up the draft picks that you wanted, you had to get basically take whatever they were giving you. That's... I mean, this team is rebuilding, let's be honest here, and I would expect them to move players if they can. At the draft, because, I mean, this team has to rebuild this whole thing all over again, in my opinion.
It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever to just sit there. I mean, this is one of the more bizarre trade deadline days you're ever going to see. That team in Vancouver, a lot of people are going to be talking about their lack of performance today. The Calgary Flames, they were active. We mentioned the Chris Russell trade and the David Jones trade. Yuri Hudler, he goes to Florida. That happened over the weekend. They got a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick for Yuri Hudler. Decent return?
Yeah, a decent return. If you that's one of those things also. If you moved him in the summer, you get more for him. Coming off
this past summer,
year, 70 points, top line. I know you want to keep your young guys going on the top line there in Gaudreau and Monahan. But, you know, they did all right. I wouldn't say that's a great return, but it's okay. I mean, I think Hudler probably... if Florida makes a little run, they could do some pretty well there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, depending on your theory on trading draft picks for expiring contracts. But a second rounder and a fourth rounder, not great, but okay.
Yeah, I think Dale Tallon did really well here, Richie. And for Yuri Hudler, he gets to play with his fellow countryman, Jaromir Jagr, mm-hmm. in Florida. Again, I said this on Saturday. I'm not saying Florida is going to win the Stanley Cup, but I wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs because you have a lot of depth there, and Roberto Luongo can steal a series. So,
real quick, the Edmonton Oilers, they shipped out a bunch of their players. They got a couple of different third-round picks. They got a fifth-round pick. They got another fifth-round pick, and then they gave up a fourth-round pick as well as Justin Schultz and Teddy Purcell. I mean, none of the core were moved today, but I'm not surprised.
No.
I think the Oilers did. I mean, they need players, they need picks, they need prospects. It's okay.
And if you think about it, Rich, Purcell essentially replaces Peary, right?
Yeah, I mean, Purcell's a better player than Peary.
Yeah, so essentially, I can see Peary wasn't factoring in, so Purcell comes in for that reason. So I like what Florida did there, and they didn't stand pat. They kind of added a little bit, gave up some draft picks, but it's a very young team. So when you're a young team and you've got quite a few prospects in the system, you can do that.
From the Oilers' perspective, the moves they made, Richie?
Well, you add Maroon, who's a bigger player, and maybe change, make you a little more physical. I'm interested to see how he keeps up with maybe some of the quicker Oilers guys, or does he play on a dry set of line, a little more of a bigger line, and play you down low? Personally, I have to trade. Pending UFA, you get a pick for him, fine. Third rounder, fine. Especially after you healthy scratched him and stuff, and he clearly was falling out of favor. Third rounder for Schultz, who apparently didn't have a lot of value. Fine with that, although I could see him possibly picking up his game under kind of a third-pairing role with a good puck-moving team like Pittsburgh. Am I missing anything else in terms of any other trades?
No, just a bunch of other depth picks, fifths, and whatever else. I mean, they got draft picks for guys
It's not going to change the way the franchise goes. The big deal is going to have to happen in the offseason.
It makes sense. Edmonton and Toronto have both got the most draft picks coming up. And that's what they should be doing. They're rebuilding. So start with next year's draft, year's draft.
Somebody said the other day, I don't know if it was yesterday, that the Oilers are rebuilding again. You can't be rebuilding again if you haven't stopped rebuilding.
just continually building. It's going to be a very big house eventually. Head to break. We come back. Marty Biron going to join us. You saw him all day on TSN. He joins us next on NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the O'Legal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour 2 of NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the 44th annual Rady JCC Sports Dinner featuring keynote speaker and Pro Football Hall of Famer Dan Marino. The dinner's coming up on Tuesday, June the 21st, and will also honor former Chicago Bears player and University of Manitoba Bison's product, Israel Adonijé. To purchase tickets, visit RadyJCC.com or call 477-7513 for more information.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are thrilled to welcome back to the program Marty Biron. You saw Marty all day long on TSN as part of the trade deadline coverage. Marty, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. I have to get out of the studio because I think both Jennifer Hedger and Dutch, who is on vacation right now, were going to come after me. So I got out of there in a hurry.
I was going to say, are you a marked man now that you hit Jennifer with that T-shirt cannon earlier on the broadcast?
Listen, the next time I'm going to point it at Dutsy. The guy pumped up the pound per square inch of PSI on the gun, and I thought it was just going to send a nice little slow pitch type of softball, and that Jen was going to be picking it up at our feet, and it just fired this rocket. It's a good thing I didn't aim higher. That opened that it was just going to curve in. Let's see. I was very lucky, and a good thing I didn't hit anybody else. Jen is a very good sport about it, and she's in really great shape. So she's like abs of steel, you know. That's what happened. So we laughed about it. I still feel terrible about it, but that's you know, we got a good chuckle of it.
Well, we had a good chuckle about it too when we watched it here on television. You know, Marty, that was probably the most interesting thing that happened during trade deadline day for a number of the hours today. Were you surprised at sort of the inactivity for much of the day? I mean, sure, there were a number of trades that they came in, you know, very late in the afternoon, but most of them weren't overly significant.
No, they weren't overly significant. And then the more and more the day was going, the more and more I realized, and everybody talked about it, that the price for certain players was so low. Brendan Peary gets a sixth-round pick. I mean, that is just very cheap for a player that scored 22 goals last year. We all talked about it. He had 24 points, so he only contributed with two assists. Okay. But still, he's a goal scorer. He's a relatively young player at 24. Still, I do believe, with tons of experience, I do believe that GMs are getting really good about not mortgaging those draft picks, the second and third round, unless you really get what you want. And there was not really any top-tier players out there other than the, you know, Dan Hamhuis and Louis Erickson that were left, and teams were just not willing to pay first-rounders or even second-rounder with a prospect. It just wasn't going to be there. So you saw a lot of the second-tier guy not go anywhere, and guys that we expected to be traded not move.
Marty, which team do you think did the best today?
Well, I mentioned on the air, I think the Carolina Hurricanes did really good. I think Ron Francis, even though his team is only a few points away from a playoff spot right now, realizing that he'd have to mortgage a little bit of his future to try to get into the playoffs, and getting into the playoffs by just finishing eighth, and the team that he's got right now is not a team that's going to compete to go deep in the playoffs. So he's better off trying to make some moves. And you look at the draft picks they've acquired, they have 7 picks in the first 3 rounds in this upcoming draft. I mean, 7 picks in the first 90. That is unbelievable. So now you put yourself in position, one, you can trade picks. Two, you can go for offer sheets, because you have all of your own picks, and these are the picks you have to use for offer sheets. You can't use those acquired in a trade. But even though you give up your second-round pick because you put an offer sheet out there, you still have one more second-rounder and 3 third-rounder coming up, so you can definitely package things. I think the Hurricanes did well. Obviously, the Leafs and the Chicago Blackhawks did really well with their trades in 2 different directions. But I thought the Hurricanes were a sneaky way of getting a big win today.
Marty, what happened in Vancouver? Why do you think there were no moves made?
Well, I tend to think that this one kind of goes to Dan Hamhuis and on his shoulders, and Verbata as well, to limit the availability or the teams possible for a trade for GM Benning over there. And then, I mean, if you're willing to waive your no movement, no trade clause to go to Vancouver, to go to Dallas or Chicago for Dan Hamhuis, why not making it more of a more teams? You're only going to go there for 2 or 3 months. You're going to be back and possibly sign again with the Canucks in the off season and stay home. I do think that he was hurting the Vancouver Canucks front office trying to make a deal. Now that is my side of the story. Now listening to the insiders, and Darren Dreger and Bob and Theo LeBrun, they all said that there was a very good deal on the table for the Vancouver Canucks to take from the Dallas Stars, and they decided not to. Or the Chicago Blackhawks probably dangled Brian Bickell out there for the Canucks to take, but they weren't going to bite on that one, knowing that they still have another year in Brian Bickell making a lot of money. So they weren't going to do that. So I think the blame gets to be shared. I always tend to think that the player in those situations probably could have done more to facilitate a trade. But when you hear the back stories, it gets very much muddied in the water as to what could have happened.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Marty Biron of TSN discussing the trades that did or did not go down today on NHL Trade Deadline Day. Marty, the Dallas Stars acquired one of the preeminent defensemen that was available, Chris Russell. You know, they get him for Jyrki Jokopacka, Brett Pollock, and a conditional draft pick. You know, how important is Chris Russell going to be to Dallas's hopes to make a long run into the Western Conference playoffs? And do you think it makes a difference? Do you think that they are now, that they can compete with the Chicago Blackhawks?
Well, I know that Chris Russell likes to block a ton of shots, but he can't play goal. And I think that the Dallas Stars are not getting the goaltending they need. Anthony Emme and Kari Lehtinen have struggled. They've given up more six-plus goal game of all any other teams in the NHL, and that's a team that's competing for the top of the Western Conference. I mean, that just is unreal that they've been able to be so successful with such bad defensive play or goaltending play. But Russell will definitely help. And I think that also has to do with the way Lindy Ruff likes to do things. I had him as a coach in Buffalo, and coming out of lockout in 05-06, he wanted to play this high-tempo, great quick transition game, and we had the personnel to do that, and I think Dallas also has the personnel to do it, but Ryan Miller was a very good goaltender for the Buffalo Sabres, especially in his early years, made up for a lot of the mistakes that were made, so he got the goaltending in Buffalo. That's why the team won the President's Trophy in 2007, I believe, so you look back and you say, well, if it was just the Dallas Stars could get some goaltending, they'd be better, but Russell will definitely help solidified that top four deep pairing, especially with a guy like Klingberg that's been playing so well. So I think he's going to help a lot.
Marty, what was it like for you as a player, you know, on trade deadline day, being around other players that knew that any minute they could be traded?
Well, I mean, earlier in my career, I knew I wasn't going anywhere. I was a prospect. Then I became a guy that had the number one job in Buffalo through a team that was going through bankruptcy and all of that. So the older guys were going to get traded. The young, cheap guys were going to stay. So I knew I wasn't being dealt at the time. But I remember guys like Jason Woolley having his cell phone on the table at pregame meal. And every time the phone rang, he picked up and came like, okay, where am I going? You know, like my bags are packed. And it never happened. You know, it's troubling for certain players. They have families. They have to figure out what's going on. I was traded to the Philadelphia Flyers on deadline day. It wasn't easy, but I was expecting it, so that made it a little bit easier for me to go after being with the Sabres for, you know, the better part of 10 years. So, you know, everybody kind of deals with it differently. You saw Devontae Smith-Pelly breaking down emotionally, like tears are coming down. I don't really understand that part because it becomes a job and you're going to get new friends on a new team. But for some players, it becomes, you know, they're leaving their family and brothers and sisters and cousins and whatnot. And, it becomes hard. So, there's definitely two sides of everything.
And Marty, you talk about players and emotions. Yeah. Devontae Smith-Pelly, you know, it's surprising to see his emotions, considering how he hasn't even been in Montreal. He wasn't in Montreal for that long. Conversely, Brooks Like, a guy who'd been in Washington for over 10 years through all the playoff wars, they finally have the team that they think is going to take it all, and certainly it's going to be hard to argue against them, at least in the Eastern Conference. How do you deal with how does a player like that deal with being dealt on the deadline after being with the team for so long and finally maybe seeing the light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I think you look at Brooks Light and he was put on waivers, so he knew that something was potentially going to happen, that his days were numbered in Washington one way or the other. I go back again, like when I got traded from the Sabres to the Flyers, I went from a team that ended up winning the President's Trophy, that was the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, to the 30th place team in the league with the Flyers. So it wasn't easy. I mean, I had worked and worked for years and I'd grown with that core group of players, you know, the Briere and Drury and J.P. Dumont and Jay McKee, but at that point he was gone. But, you know, and seeing the second wave of guys, the Vanek, Bombenville, Roy, Miller, and all those guys come through. So it definitely shakes you to your core a little bit. But I do believe as professionals, you know that there's always that possibility, and that now you may have a different role, and you try to do that role as best as you can. I think every year we put like the trade bait list, who's the top trade candidate out there, and what of the teams that have won the cup done over the past few years at trade deadline. I think we should look at the guys that we're trading away and what their situation end up being, because a lot of them end up in good situation. Maybe they don't win the cup that year, but they do something pretty good later in the in their career. So that experience is something that may help guys get through a different another trade or another trade deadline, or being with a team. If you really want to be on that team, you're going to do everything you can to stay there. Maybe they learn from that those situations.
Marty, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, entering into this, you know, trade deadline period today, maybe the whole week leading up to it, most people would have said that Chicago and Washington are the two favorites to represent their respective conferences in the Stanley Cup Finals. Has anything that has occurred in the last week or 10 days changed your opinion on that front?
Nothing that has occurred changed my opinion. I started to not feel as good about Washington as everybody have. I think Braden Holtby's played way too much hockey. I think this is a team that looks a little bit tired, a little bit sluggish at times right now. And I love Barry Trotz. He was my coach, or my assistant coach with the World Championship, and he's just a very nice man. I got to talk to him many, many times. But I'm still waiting to see what he can do in the playoffs. Not so much the Washington Capitals, because I think that team is ready. But there's always that coaching aspect that comes into play in the playoffs. So I think I'm less on the Washington Capitals bandwagon as I was, let's say, in December. And somehow I jumped on the Tampa Bay Lightning bandwagon. I like the way they're playing. So that, to me, is a bit scary to say that I'm switching teams a little bit like that. And Chicago's still at the top, but the Anaheim Ducks, man, did they make you start to ask questions and look at the matchup? It could be Anaheim, Chicago in the West, and Tampa Bay and Washington in the East. Those would be unbelievable conference finals if they were to happen.
Marty, you've had a full day being with TSN. We really appreciate your time this evening, and we'll let you get back. I'm sure you're running to your safe house to avoid the wrath of Jennifer Hedger.
I'm just about going over the border in about 5 minutes. So as soon as I get to the United States, I think I'm in the clear.
Thank you, Marty. Appreciate your time this evening. Always appreciate you joining us on the program.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Marty Biron for joining us. Always a great guest here on the program. Still to come in about 10 minutes' time, Adrian Dater is going to join us. He's with Bleacher Report. Of course, he covered the Colorado Avalanche for many years, so you can talk about some of the moves the Avs made in today's NHL trade deadline day. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. We continue our look throughout the NHL. We'll go to the Atlantic Division and start with the Florida Panthers. They were quite active this weekend, not so much today, but this weekend, acquiring Jiri Hudler, Teddy Purcell, Jakob Kindle. They give up a second-round pick, a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick, a sixth-round pick, which they then reacquire in exchange for Brandon Peary. So Hudler, Purcell, and Kindle. Does this change your outlook of the Florida Panthers for this playoff stretch drive?
Yeah, probably. It makes them a more formidable foe, I think, in that it rounds out their top nine scoring ability. And, you know, you need to get Huberto back, and just read George Richard said that both Purcell and Why am I forgetting the
Hoodler?
Other? Hoodler. Will
Kindle?
Be in,
which one?
No, and Hoodler will okay. be in the lineup tomorrow in Winnipeg.
Yeah, so the Panthers, of course, and the Jets tomorrow.
But you look up the middle now, and you're looking at a pretty pretty good core there. Obviously, Barkov, and you have Bukestad, who's played wing and center, and you have Trocheck, and you add Hoodler there, Drew, and you put Purcell on the wings. You have Huberto, and you have, I mean, you have a pretty good a group of forwards there. And the third line was lacking. I mean, the guys on the third line just weren't NHL scoring quality players.
Mm-hmm.
So you've added that, and then you add Kindle to the back end that you know has had some injuries, and he can move the puck, and he's not the most impressive player, but he's not a bad. He's not useless. I don't know why you give up a pick for him if he was on waivers a little while ago. That's weird, but. And a sixth rounder to boot, not even a seventh rounder. Not sure if they had a seventh rounder, but just the idea of giving up a pick for a guy who was available before. At the end of the day, we're talking about sixth, seventh round picks there. I think the team has gotten better. Is it the year to trade two, three, four, and six? That's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at every trade in a vacuum, you can say, okay, you know, like Hoodler can help you for a second and fourth. But on the other hand, I guess you say, hey, they're in first place and they feel they take a run. They have a lot of good young players.
Love the moves. You might as well call Saturday, you know, Dale Saturday. I mean, what?
Dale Saturday?
Well, I mean, he had a good day, I thought. I mean, whatever. I mean, I couldn't think of another adjective.
Why don't you call it Saturdale?
Saturdale.
Well, I like that, Drew.
Really? You couldn't have
we
thought
said
about
that
on
time.
Your own?
That's good. When?
Just now.
I wasn't listening. I was checking my phone. But regardless, Dale... was having
we actually know this time you actually weren't checking your phone, you actually were listening,
which is
just angled only towards Drew.
I was inactively listening.
He's got his focus where it belongs, right on me.
But to Richie's point, we just watched the Panthers down in Florida. Richie watched them twice, but we saw them play the Jets
watch them tomorrow too.
That's right,
yeah. Last Saturday. And I mean, this is a team that not only do they have a lot of depth up front, Richie, you mentioned that, you know, Huberto is going to come back, and obviously Barkov and Bukestad up the middle there. And Jager's having another great year at 44 years old, the ageless wonder. But Riley Smith's having a good year. Now you throw in Hoodler and Purcell. But that defense, I think, is underrated. I mean, we all know how good Aaron Ekblad is, and he's only going to get better. But Dmitry Kulikov, I think, has really improved, Rich. Earlier in his career, he was kind of a bit of a hothead, and you didn't know what to expect of Kulikov. He was a high draft pick. I think Kulikov has formed a really good D pair there with Ekblad. And I think, you know, Brian Campbell, again, is another guy. I think he's a pending UFA.
He is a pending UFA.
And and he's a guy that, you know, he makes a lot of money, but I think he's been quietly very good. And so is Eric Gudbranson, I think, is underrated. You know, big body there in defense. So you throw in Jakob Kindle, a guy who's kind of fallen out of favor a little bit in Detroit. I think this team is very good, and we mentioned this, you know, a couple of segments ago.
Kendall's got another year in his contract, we should note that.
Which is you know, even better for Florida, but we talked about it. I mean, this team, I could see them, you know, the wrong matchup. I mean, I don't know who they're matching up against right now, but if they play a Detroit or, you know, a Tampa Bay or something like that, I don't like that matchup, but I could easily see them going to the conference finals.
Yeah, I would think it would either be Pittsburgh or Detroit right now.
Yeah, and I like the Pittsburgh matchup better. But
yeah, but we talked about the other day, you know, on Saturday, and I was thinking about it after the show, maybe even if they fall behind Tampa, playing Boston the first round might be even better.
Sure. Yeah, Boston's defense is a mess.
Florida doesn't have a seventh rounder, by the way. So
okay, so that's why they gave
up two sixths. So
why not go for
three?
It?
And, three now, it's two.
And Richie, to your point about giving up the draft picks, they didn't give up a first rounder. They still have got their first rounder.
That's true, and you get him for another year. If he's on waivers, then you. I don't understand.
It does seem like the Panthers. I mean, you know, they're going to be the. It's really. It seems like from the Atlantic Division, it's going to come down to them and Tampa Bay to see who's going to be the conference
likely,
finalist.
Yes.
In, yeah. You know, so with these moves, and then you look at Tampa Bay, who do absolutely nothing today, which is bizarre.
They've been playing a lot better, though.
I know they've been playing a lot better, but I mean, you know.
That bizarre? I mean, are we that shocked?
Well, we talked about it on Saturday that with Stamkos being a UFA at season's end, they have to sort of go for it here.
Well, did we say that? I don't think we said they have to go for it, Drew.
I thought we did. I mean, it could be wrong.
I thought we said that if they're going to trade Drew, and you have to be a guy who can help you now to make that trade.
Okay.
And, the you know, could there be a, I thought adding a defenseman would help. I didn't think we said they had to make a move. I mean, they're still probably Vegas favorites to win the conference finals through that division.
We said that we thought that, if anything, they'd get a defenseman, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like a bottom-pairing defenseman.
Apparently they were calling for a winger, possibly.
Yeah, and that'll be a depth guy. I mean, they're pretty set guys. Like, the Lightning team has not changed much from last year. Mm-hmm. What's changed is the triplets haven't been as good. I mean, Stamkos has started to come on after Stevie Y said he wasn't going to trade him. But, you know, the defense is pretty similar to last year. I mean, they've got a couple of new bodies in there. They re-signed Coburn to the three-year extension. But I agree with what Marty Biron said. I wouldn't want to play the Lightning in the playoffs either. Sure. I think they're a bit of a sleeping giant there. So I'm not that surprised they didn't make any moves.
What about Boston? They were active right at the deadline, late at it, acquiring Jean-Michel Lyles from the Carolina Hurricanes and Lee Stempniak from the Devils. They give up a third-round pick, a second-round pick, a fourth-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and prospect Anthony Kamara. You know, don't trade Louis Erickson.
Well, I mean, that's consistent in that you're not trading Erickson and you're making a run for it.
Does this change their outlook, these two moves?
Not significantly. Is Lyles an upgrade over what they have? Yes. Is he defensively dependable? Not in my opinion. But are Stempniak and Lyles better than the players they had in those positions? Yeah, they are. I mean, the Boston forward group is very good, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, you have Bergeron, who's tremendous. You have Krejci.
Yeah, Marchand's had a great year.
And Marchand's had a great year. You know, you have guys like Hayes and Connolly and Bolesky's coming on now. I mean, you have skill. You add in Stempniak. They can get offense from everywhere. But does Lyles get their defense to a point of making them a real threat? Maybe in that division they say they'll take their chances, but I don't think it's enough. So I understand if you're going to keep Erickson making moves, because keeping him and not making any moves didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure that decision was the right one.
And for me, the key in the playoffs, Rich, is can Tuukka Rask be the Tuukka Rask of 2011 when they won the Stanley Cup? I mean, that is the big question mark, because I agree with you. I mean, this team is, I think, pretty underrated as far as their depth at forward. A guy like Lee Stempniak can play on the first line with Bergeron and Marchand. He can play on the second line if it's with Krejci and Erickson. Third line, you've got a guy like Ryan Spooner. Richie mentioned Bolesky has started to play better. And they've got a lot of depth there. And, you know, they've got Landon Ferraro as well, you know, who's getting a shot there. And it's that defense just isn't as good as it used to be. So I still don't think this is a team that's going to cause a lot of damage in the playoffs. But, you know, good for Lee Stempniak. Again, getting acquired by a team at the trade deadline. Goes to a team that is going to make the playoffs as opposed to the Devils, who aren't going to make the playoffs. So good for him.
With the Bruins, with the Panthers, and with the Lightning, you have three teams there that all have a very good top nine forward group. So it'll be quite an interesting division to see how it plays out. Let's head to break. When we come back, Adrian Dater, the national hockey columnist for Bleacher Report, is going to join us. You're listening to NHL This Week Trade Deadline Special on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Adrian Dater. Adrian is the NHL columnist for Bleacher Report. He's covered the Colorado Avalanche for numerous years. Adrian, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. Adrian, we want to start with the Colorado Avalanche. I mentioned that you've covered them for a number of years. They're quite active today, going out and, you know, getting Mikhail Bodker from the Arizona Coyotes. Of course, they get Eric Jelena from the New Jersey Devils as well. Are you surprised that, you know, Patrick Waugh, Joe Sakic, the Brain Trust in Denver, were as active today on NHL trade deadline as they were?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Joe Sakic had said all along that he wasn't going to trade for any rental players. And lo and behold, he trades for two rental players. One of them last week, Sean Matthias, who, you know, you can't really call him a big acquisition probably, but he's a potential UFA. But they did get a guy who has a good career in front of him, looks like Mikhail Boddicker. And, you know, I would be surprised, though, if the Avs really did give up what I would call true top assets. But but I don't think they did here. So I think it was a win. I mean, Joe Sakic himself said today, which is unfortunate for fans of Connor Bleakley to hear, one of the guys they traded, but he said, well, we didn't trade any first round picks, and we didn't trade any top prospects, which, ouch, yeah. To get Boddicker. So, in their mind, they didn't. We'll see. Maybe Connor Bleakley would turn into a fine player and prove him wrong. But to get a guy like Boddicker, a 26-year-old guy, you give up a 36-year-old guy, Alex Pangue, who's clearly on the downside. Two guys who weren't, and two prospects who were not going to be part of the Knicks next year. They were not going to offer Connor Bleakley a contract. He still had not been signed to a pro contract, and they said they were not going to do it. To me, that sounds like a short-term win. Will it be a long-term win? We don't know, but they're a better team today than they were yesterday.
Adrian, do you know how close the Avalanche were to acquiring Jonathan Drouin?
No, not very close. Not that I've heard. I know that, you know, there's a feeling in the organization that they didn't like what he has done sitting out with a contract. I think you'll find that a common sentiment around the league, and I think that's a big reason why he's still sitting in the minors. I know the Avs would have taken him if they thought they could get him at a good price, but apparently Steve Yzerman wants the moon for him too, and it's not, at this point he's not getting it, so he sits. So, it's not close. Maybe this summer though, let's say Boddicker leaves and Drouin's still there, and they've got to reshuffle and plan for the future. Yeah, I could see them making a better offer and maybe getting him. He did play with Nathan MacKinnon and Junior, and I'm sure those two would be a pretty good combo again. But the overall consensus on Drouin is that he's hurt himself a lot by sitting out with a while under contract.
Adrian, I mean, quickly take a step away from the trade deadline stuff. I mean, obviously you wrote the great book on the Avalanche and Red Wings rivalry. What did you think of the quote-unquote old-timers game on Saturday? Or Friday,
yeah,
whatever
awesome.
It was.
Yeah, Friday night. It was awesome. I mean, couldn't have gotten any better. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was 44,000 people sitting there watching intently to, you know, a bunch of old guys. It was just fantastic. I mean, you know, for me personally, I know a lot of old people who watch the Avs over the years. It was just great to see them one more time on their uniforms. And it was a good game, too. I mean, Patrick Walk lost a lot of leather out there. It looks like he'd be a backup goalie on some teams and still won a few games. He's looked good. Forsberg flying around out there. And, you know, seeing guys like Mike Richey and Chris Simon even back there. You know, it was great. I was in the locker room after the game. It was, you know, like nothing had ever changed at all except for receding hairlines and growing waistline. nothing changes with those guys, and it was really fun. They're a bunch of great guys, and it was a big honor for me that night. It was one of my career highlights. I'll look back, and I'm sure saying I was there.
Yeah, that's great. It was great to watch from afar. You know, Adrian, we talked about the Avalanche. There aren't really as many playoff races as people may think, and one of them is that the race for the last spot in the West with those three teams, Nashville, Colorado, Minnesota. Are you surprised, specifically the Wild, because obviously Nashville made the big deal earlier this year, are you surprised the Wild were pretty quiet?
I don't, maybe a little. I mean, I just don't think there are that many big names available for them to go after. I mean, Eric Staal wasn't going to come here. He wanted to go play with his brother. I thought they might make a run at Drouin, but, you know, I keep hearing that, you know, Yzerman wants first-round pick plus a prospect, you know, for a guy who's barely played, who hasn't lit the world on fire while he did play, and now sits out with a contract. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be very lucky for Yzerman to get anywhere near that when it's all said and done. I think this was a mistake. Although I do find it interesting that I read a report saying that Yzerman would maybe welcome them back. I mean, maybe that's what it'll come to. They're just neither side won on this, so maybe you just go back to each other. It's like the couple that wanted to get a divorce. Well, maybe you get one last stab at the the marriage counseling session, you find a way. I don't know. But, yeah, I guess, you know, Minnesota, though, they've made a lot of deals over the years, and they just changed their coach. I think they probably thought that changing their coach was their biggest change, and that's what they needed most, maybe. And so far, they're playing pretty well with him. So, so maybe they made a smart move not doing much.
Our guest is Adrian Dater. Adrian covers the NHL for Bleacher Report. And Adrian, Richard asked in the previous question about sort of the battle for the final wild card spots in the Western Conference. With the moves that the Avs made today, do you think that that puts them sort of in the driver's seat to maybe get ahead of Minnesota and earn that final wild card berth? Do you think they're now the better of the two teams?
Well, you know what? It's a good hard question to answer because, you know, I still think Minnesota has more overall talent and depth than the Avalanche, you know, but especially defensively, where I think most games come down to. But, yeah, I think Boddicker is going to play with Nathan MacKinnon, and I think that gives him a great potential line there that could swing a difference. And, you know, I know they're going to use Gillen on the power play unit, so shoot some big bombs at his back there, and that's what they needed. They felt like they didn't get Gillen off for his defense, they got him for his potential power play presence. So we'll see there. But, you know, the problem with the Avalanche is they've played too many games. I think, let's see here, I'm looking at the standings, and I think the Wild have still got two games in hand on the Avalanche, if I'm not mistaken here. NHL site would ever load. Oh, no, it's only one game in hand. But, yeah, it's down to one game in hand, the Wild have. So, big game tomorrow night, that's for sure. Two-point lead. Avs win that. This will be a game out of pocket to the Wild. But, you know, four-point lead, 18 games to go. The odds get slimmer and slimmer for the team behind with all the three-point games and stuff. So, I mean, you know, it may come down to the fact that the Avs, you know, won the deadline just because if they get a goal from Boddicker to win the game tomorrow and beat the Wild, that's all it might take to make the playoffs this second. It's going to be that close and tight. So, you know, it's the Avs want to win. The Avs really want to make the playoffs this year. They've decided as an organization, and who doesn't, right? Everybody wants to make it, but the Avs in particular want to make the playoffs this year. They do not want to go back to their fans and say, well, we're still young, we're still rebuilding. You know, they're actually not all that young. And they've been rebuilding a while now. And the fans want to see some wins. And, you know, so there's some pressure to make it. And maybe that's good for this team because I think they've relied too long on that young rebuilding excuse. And now, you know, now getting back to the old ways of this team a little bit. Let's try to win more now. And, you know, and if they do, you know, it's high risk, high reward, but it's worked for them in the past, so maybe it's the way they should do it again now and for the future.
Adrian, I know it's the cliche question here, and we've talked a lot about the Avalanche. Of course, you covered them for many years. We talked about the Wild, but when you look across the NHL, was there one team that stuck out as a loser and one team that stuck out as a winner for you, or was it a couple teams that you thought did okay?
You know, I thought, you know, that's a tough one. I don't think there's any big losers. I think everybody's so close together that, you know, I mean, the teams that you might want to say lost, they're already going to make the playoffs anyway. Pretty much all the playoff spots are set except for that last wild card spot in the East West.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it could change a little bit if somebody goes in the tank, but, I thought Chicago was a good winner, obviously, with getting Andrew Ladd. They're definitely going to be tough. And, you know, you think the LA Kings, they didn't do a whole lot of teams like, but yet, you know, they find a way to always make good use of their guys they get. Maybe Chris Verstee is going to be the new Marian Gaborek who lights it up in the playoffs. I don't know, but, I think everybody just, you know, it's hard to judge winners and losers anymore in the trade deadline because not a whole lot happens anymore. I'm a little dubious of all these picks that maybe Toronto keeps claiming is going to rebuild all the future. I mean, first of all, it takes a long time to develop players out of draft. And, you know, none of them are, I mean, except for their own lottery pick, I mean, they're not going to have all these, you know, top 10 picks. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of second, third round guys. So maybe I think they sort of, I don't know, I feel like they may have sold off a little too much, but we'll see. We'll see. But otherwise, yeah, Montreal didn't do much, so I'm sure the fans there are frustrated, but they're probably out of the playoffs now. There's not really much to buy. You know, they shouldn't be a buyer. So I'm sure those fans are upset, but otherwise it's just kind of a ho-hum deadline, wasn't it?
And it sort of was. Adrian Dater covers the NHL for Bleacher Report. Adrian, really appreciate your time this evening. It may have been a ho-hum day, but it's never a ho-hum interview when we get to talk to you here on the program.
Well, thanks for having me, and appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Adrian. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week, Trade Deadline Special here on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on NHL Trade Deadline Day here on TSN 1290. Programming note, of course, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9 a.m. on this fine station, as we'll get you set for the Jets and the Habs in a battle of the basement, a quasi-basement, I guess, on coming up. It's busy.
Then what's Sunday?
Well, it's just, I don't know, the sub-basement? Yeah. Sunday, at least I'm looking forward to it, because you get to see Connor McDavid for the only time this year.
Yeah, it's always exciting, though, when the Canadian teams come into the MTS Center, right? Especially the Habs with the original six and all that. So, I mean, you know, all these teams might be, you know, extreme long shots to make the playoffs. They're not making the playoffs.
Nobody here is making the playoffs.
So it'll still be exciting, as you said. I mean, when Montreal comes into town, tons of Habs fans here in Winnipeg. And as you said, Connor McDavid, best young player in the game. So still a reason to go.
Well, there's always a reason to go. This segment, of course, brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in that fine event coming up on June the 5th. We're going to be raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer and Dementia Wards. So you can join IC by either cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or tweet at us at Illegal Curve, and we'll send you some more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Gentlemen, the Metropolitan Division, we start with the Washington Capitals. They had acquired Mike Weber earlier, about 10 days ago, maybe it was a week ago now, whatever it was. And then late last night, they acquired Daniel Winnick and a fifth round pick from the Toronto Maple Leafs in exchange for Brooks Like, Connor Carrick, and a second round pick. Are you surprised that they made this move?
Give up a lot for Winnick.
Yeah.
I'm just more surprised that, I mean, okay, they think they're going to go for it. I mean, they think they have that chance, and he'll help get on the forecheck and help the depth lines. He can move better than Like. I'm just surprised, and we spoke about it earlier. I think it might have been with Hustler. Why not?
Rich, you've been on four shows today.
Yeah. Been a fun day. Why not?
Fun is code for tired.
Why not add? Yeah, I want that too. Why not add defense?
Well, I would have thought that the getting rid of the Like salary.
Ham Hughes made sense there.
Well, he wouldn't go there, I don't think. But let's remember.
Or Russell.
We spoke on. Yes, that's right. I agree with that. When we spoke on Saturday, Carlson was not confirmed to be out for 3 to 4 weeks.
And now he is.
Now he is. And that gives you some flexibility cap wise.
Mm-hmm.
And you to me, I mean, if Carlson comes back, you don't need a defenseman, but it sure would be nice. And Weber, I'm not that high on Michael Weber.
Well, Mike Weber's certainly a seventh defenseman. But when you look at this Capitals team, Richie, I know you're high on the Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
Brooks Orpik missed a lot of hockey this year, and the Washington Capitals didn't lose a lot of games without Brooks Orpik, right? So I'm not saying that they won't miss John Carlson, but Matt Niskanen, Carl Alzner, Dmitry Orlov, I mean, this is a good group of defensemen here, and I think that, even though they didn't acquire maybe a guy like a Chris Russell, I still think that this team is looking good heading into the playoffs.
Well, I mean, you have Nate Schmidt, you have Orlov, and you have Chorney, and what Orlov will do is a good puck mover, he's a skilled player. Schmidt's a good puck mover, and Chorney, you know, is kind of more, he'll be more of a stay-at-home guy.
Yep. Just signed him.
Yeah, like, to an extension.
Yep.
I never loved Taylor Chorney. Some people are higher on him than I am. But the point is, those guys are all pretty similar in terms of, okay, they may not say similar, but they're not your stay-at-home kind of the dependable kind of that Chris Russell kind of guy. Now, Chris mm-hmm. Russell can pass the puck. Don't get me wrong. Chris Russell has puck skills. But the idea is, like, that kind of a player who will be a little more engaged defensively.
But if you think about it, sorry to cut you off, Rich, but 3 to 4 weeks, I mean, Carlson's going to be ready for the playoffs.
Well, you've had the Orpik injuries.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to make a huge deal of this.
No.
Because I still think they're in good shape. Yep. You had the Orpik injuries, and now you have Carlson. One of those guys goes down, that's a big role to take on.
Well, we talked about it on Saturday that, you know, with Carlson now being out 4 weeks.
Well, we didn't know that.
We don't know that. But now that we know he's out, we talked about the ability to engage in salary cap manipulation by keeping Carlson out for the entirety yeah. of the next 4 weeks until the playoffs start. Because you don't need to rush him back.
Well, they've already got the division locked up, right, Drew? So this was the best time to have an injury to Carlson. So you never want to have an injury.
You can get around any salary cap issues by, you know, by yeah. keeping Carlson out until the end of the regular season. There's no salary cap in the playoffs. To your point, it does seem like there's an opportunity for the Capitals to get even just a little bit better that for whatever reason they decided not to jump on it. No,
thought Weber was sufficient. I'm just not the biggest Weber fan.
That's fine. I mean, you know, valid points. The Rangers get Eric Staal. You know, what does that do? I mean, we know.
I can't believe we're 3 minutes left in the show and we're just hitting Eric Staal here.
I mean, Eric Staal, I thought Carolina did well considering how limited the market was. Essentially, it was New York.
Mm-hmm.
And you get 2 seconds, and you get the prospect who I don't know anything about. Yeah. Eric Staal, you watch him at the pace at which he plays, his skating. I don't know if it's – I don't think it's what it was. He hasn't seemed as – he's not as able to create offense as he was. Last year he wasn't. This year he hasn't been. Maybe he gets a boost in New York, maybe playing with more – you know, in a more intense environment, more skilled role, more pressure. That'll help him. But – I haven't seen enough watching Carolina games, unless there's going to be a snap of a finger and a change. I haven't seen enough from Eric Staal to be convinced that this is the difference maker.
I agree with you, Rich. I don't know if it's the difference maker, but what I do like is that Eric Staal goes to the Rangers and he doesn't have to be the guy, right? There's other guys, Derek Brassard, Rick Nash, Matt Zuccarello, Derek Stepan, Kevin Hayes, like other younger players, JT Miller's had a pretty good year. He doesn't necessarily have to be the go-to guy for offense.
Does that?
So I think that even though, I mean, you maybe expect him to fill. I think he'll probably be the third line center there in New York. I don't think he wants to play wing, which maybe bumps someone like Kevin Hayes. We'll see what happens, and we'll see how Alain Vigneault uses him, but I think Staal is a good acquisition because I think the Rangers this year have kind of needed a boost offensively at times. But again,
yeah.
To further your point, Richie, I don't think that the Rangers – I don't have them going to the conference finals. I don't think they're as good as they were a couple years ago. And then the question is, well, is he a rental? Did you rent him just to get to the second round? But they're obviously all in, right? When you have Henrik Lundqvist, you're obviously all in. But if you don't re-sign him, was it worth that if you get knocked out, let's say, in the first or second round, right?
Now, those are all fair questions. I just wonder, you say not being the guy. I think we're talking about differently. Not being the guy, one of the sole sources of offense to rely on is what you're saying. I'm saying I actually think being the guy in terms of being in a pressured environment, I should say, actually may help him. Carolina, yep. He was relied on for offense on a team that didn't have a lot of pressure on.
That's a good point.
In New York, he'll be relied on for offense with other guys, but with pressure. Maybe that wakes him up a bit.
Well, he has been a money player in past in Team Canada and, you know, before a Stanley Cup champion.
He may play the wing, Yezzy. They may move Hayes. Hayes at center, I think, is Hayes better at center. Maybe he plays with Hayes on the left wing.
Biggest winners, Florida. Biggest losers, Vancouver.
I was going to say that we can discuss that on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290.
And the biggest loser is Vancouver.
Yeah.
I didn't see any big winners here. Nobody got any kind of steals. Everybody was giving up value for what they got.
Big thanks to producer Eric for doing his great job behind the board. For Richard Pollock and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Big thanks to all of our sponsors. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.